The next matter on for oral argument this morning is Stillwell v. Stillwell. Excuse me. Counsel, as you are situating yourselves, I will...
Ms. Brenner, I believe you're on this side.
Thank you. We do have a bride and groom sitting here, appellant on your right and respondent on your left.
I'm not a frequent flyer.
Well, that's just fine. I'll just advise you of our rules. Each of you will have 15 minutes to present your argument with an additional 5 minutes to appellant's counsel if you would like to use that time for rebuttal. Those timing restrictions are indicated in the light and clock in the lectern, and so you can keep track as you're going along. The yellow light indicates you've got 5 minutes left. The red light indicates your time has expired and you should have stopped. There is a button at the in the front of the lectern which allows you to raise or lower it to your height's convenience. Please state your name as you commence each leg of your argument so we can keep track on our audio recording of who's making which argument. Counsel for appellant, whenever you are ready to proceed, you have the floor.
Thank you.
May it please the court, I am Matthew Gilbert, G-I-L-B-E-R-T, representing the appellant, Harry Stillwell. On March 11th, 2019, a special master was appointed in this matter. The special master was not authorized to modify custody. The special master, on April 26, 2021, entered a 17th order which provides, in an abundance of caution and given the circumstances of this family, it is appropriate to limit father's contact with the children until the child protection and criminal investigation is resolved. However, it is not consistent with Harry Jack's best interest to suspend all contact with father for an indefinite period. Despite the clear language from the 17th order, Mr. Stillwell has had no parenting time with either of his children for over a 3-year period.
Did that order suspend indefinitely?
It did, Your Honor. There's no end date to that suspension of time.
I mean, many of the orders, I think, were suspending parenting time for purposes of acquiring more information to help the special master or the judge make rulings, right?
That specific order, it did permit supervised parenting time in a center. That was ultimately revoked by a subsequent order. But again, the factual basis is Mr. Stillwell has had zero parenting time for over a 3-year period.
A part of that, am I correct that part of that, the time in which your client has not had parenting time would have corresponded to criminal court orders restricting parenting time?
There was a domestic abuse no contact order in effect that was later modified to permit parenting time from a family court file. With that, even having that permitted, again, Mr. Stillwell was denied parenting time with Harry Jack, who was not subsequent to the criminal investigation. There's never been a finding of child endangerment relative to either child, and there's never been an evidentiary hearing in this matter. Frankly, over 3 years, that's just not a temporary period. That's a de facto modification of custody, and it's a restriction on Mr. Stillwell's parenting time. Before this, he had a 50-50 schedule with his son, Harry Jack. We think in Boland, as well as Taflin, it makes clear that there should be an evidentiary hearing. If there's an allegation of child endangerment, which there's never been a finding of, Mr. Stillwell is entitled to an evidentiary hearing on the topic. The district court or the special master cannot just suspend his parenting time indefinitely. With that, Mr. Stillwell did file a motion to modify custody and parenting time.
Am I correct that at some point when your client was allowed supervised parenting time, he declined?
He did initially. That's correct, Your Honor. He'd like nothing more to have parenting time, whether it's supervised or not. Again, but it's a disservice to this family, as well as to my client, just to indefinitely suspend his time, as has been done here, without affording him due process.
For how long did he voluntarily, how much of this time period was part of his voluntary withdrawal?
I'd have to look. I think it was 6 months to a year. Just the thought of being in a supervision center is not very favorable to anyone. I don't think he ever imagined that this would go on for over a three-year period, again, without having an evidentiary hearing on these issues and really being heard on these issues.
If at all, does the voluntary nature of part of this, part of his no contact with his son, bear upon our analysis?
So in order to modify parenting time or custody, there needs to be a finding of child endangerment, and there has to be an evidentiary hearing, as set forth in Bolin and Taflin. And there has to be a finding by the court.
So are you saying it has no bearing?
I'm sorry, he hasn't had time?
Are you saying that your client's voluntary relinquishment of the supervised time that was offered for that period, you're saying it has no bearing upon our analysis, or it does or doesn't, I guess?
It does not, Your Honor, in my opinion. Again, is still, that's a restriction to his time, and that restriction has gone on for over a three-year period, and by no means is that a temporary period.
Mr. Gilbert, but I think I'm asking and following up on your argument. It seems like the question is begged, when must the evidentiary hearing be provided? In other words, I don't think the district court or the special master you are not entitled to an evidentiary hearing. I think the special master was in the process of trying to figure out, you know, what should be done and to gather more information and to encourage therapy and other kind of intermediate steps that might allow it to continue. But I mean, is it your view that, you know, the evidentiary hearing must be set on, say, you know, within 30 days, or I don't know. Can you elaborate on that,
Your Honor?
Because and the point of my question is, respondent's argument is in essence that this was merely a temporary matter, a temporary suspension of his right to exercise parenting time, during which time the special master was, was not doing nothing, was not denying the evidentiary hearing, was not denying parenting time for prospective purposes, but just was trying to administer the matter. So the question, I guess, going back to my question, when must the evidentiary hearing be provided, and what authority do we look for that?
And, Your Honor, this case is unique because there is a special master appointed. The special master does not have the ability to modify custody.
Can I stop you on that? Because and when you say that, it sounds like you're saying because the special master does not have authority to modify custody, the special master may not suspend parenting time. Is that what you're saying?
The special master does have the authority to temporarily suspend parenting time. I don't think there's any question about that. That's set forth in the order appointing the special master. That the issue here is that this suspension has gone on for over a three-year period.
Yeah, okay, but I just, this is the second time you've said that it does not have authority to modify custody. I think you're relying on paragraph 3D of the order appointment, which says, quote, the special master shall not have the power to modify the current custody labels. So in other words, that to me, that seems limited to the idea of who has legal custody over which issues and who has physical custody. But I don't know.
It does.
Does it go beyond that?
This goes back to MJF, which is a Minnesota Supreme Court case, that this is a de facto modification of custody. By suspending and restricting Mr. Stillwell's parenting time with his son, he had a 50-50 schedule. Now he's got no parenting time. That's a restriction.
Does that change the labels?
That does. Under MJF, that is a de facto modification of physical custody. That's effectively awarding the mother physical custody of the minor child.
Okay. Can you go back to my prior question, which is about, you know, when must the evidentiary hearing be provided? Is there any space in the law for a temporary suspension while the district court or special master considers the issue?
Typically what happens in family court is there's an emergency motion filed. And pursuant to the rule, I believe it's 303.04, there would be a hearing that would need to take place within 14 days. And to the extent there's a temporary schedule or restriction in parenting time, there's always an evidentiary hearing that would follow that. Again, it's a denial of due process if parenting time is just suspended indefinitely without an evidentiary hearing taking place. And it's even more prevalent because, again, the special master does not have the ability to modify custody. There's, again, been no finding of child endangerment. There's a clear restriction of Mr. Stillwell's parenting time, and under Boland and Taflin, he's entitled to an evidentiary hearing and to be heard on these issues. The other minor child, Alexandra, had also...
Mr. Gilbert, can I just ask you to use initials of children?
I'm happy to. I believe it's AJS, had reported to law enforcement that she had been whipped with towels and belts, and she's told repeatedly by her mother to kill herself. Based upon this police report that my client had provided, he did file a motion to modify custody and parenting time. Under the Nice-Peterson standard, this is a clear prima facie basis to modify both custody and parenting time. The daughter subsequently recanted statements related to being hit with belts and towels, but insisted that she's repeatedly told to kill herself. She's also expressed suicidal ideation. And again, these are all bases for an evidentiary hearing, as well as the court should take these factual allegations as true. The court
Mr.
Aired.
Gilbert, so I have a question about whether and how that allegation was presented to the district court. I'm looking at your client's affidavit from January of 2022, as well as the memorandum in support of that. I don't know if the affidavit mentioned, I'm not sure if either document mentions at all what you just talked about, the whipping or beating or any reference to suicide. I mean, is that in these documents that you presented to the district court?
And, Your Honor, to be fair, there were quite a few motions filed, but there is the actual police report where this is identified, and that was attached as an exhibit.
As an exhibit to his affidavit?
Correct.
But then what about the, looking at the memorandum filed January 6th of 2022, was it mentioned in there?
I'd have to look at the memorandum. I'm not, again, I'm happy to look at that.
Okay, well, that's okay, but just.
But again, I mean, this was the police report that was attached, and this was the basis he requested to modify parenting time in custody. These are very serious allegations made by a minor child.
It wasn't
child
the sole
law enforcement.
Right? I mean, it wasn't that, I mean, the motion, it seems like, wasn't focused on that single fact. I mean, because on appeal, I think you say, like in the heading of your brief, District Court, Roman 2, the District Court erred in finding AGS's statement to law enforcement that she was whipped by respondent and told to kill herself to not create a prima facie case. I feel like that wasn't the motion that you presented. Your motion was asking for a change of custody, but based on perhaps, you know, a multitude of facts, but that just didn't seem to be so prominent in the argument you made to the district court as it is in your argument on appeal.
And, Your Honor, I'd have to review the pleadings, but I do recall that was a big part of the motion that was filed, and that was the basis, that child endangerment, where the child is reporting to law enforcement that these things are happening. The other major issue is with regard to the award of over $50,000 in attorney's fees. Appellant has a due process right to appeal the special master's order. That's a right that's afforded specifically to him in the order appointing the special master. The district court has even acknowledged this in the March 2024 order, and we ask the court to take judicial notice of that, which provides the court finds that just like mother, father has a right to seek relief from the court. The court finds that father has made good faith arguments as to the court as to why he believes the special master's 22nd order should be vacated. This is especially true when Mr. Stillwell's due process rights are being violated and there's an indefinite suspension of his parenting time and really a de facto modification of custody, all taking place without an evidentiary hearing. This right is further afforded to Mr. Stillwell under Minnesota Rules of Civil Procedure 53.07, Part B. This case is similar to the Warrington case, where the district court, if it's going to award attorney's fees, it needs to really specify what conduct unnecessarily contributed to the length and extent of the proceeding. The court's rationale just relies on motions being filed, and most of the motions were denied. There was a motion granted regarding having a guardian ad litem appointed, but just because a motion is denied doesn't mean there's a basis for an award of conduct-based attorney's fees. Again, I think the district court's March 2024 order is instructive for this court, and frankly, that should have been the finding that was made by the district court originally, especially when it comes to a father's right to have parenting time and contact with his children. With that said, it looks like I'm out of time.
Thank you. You will have five additional minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you.
Counsel for respondent.
Good morning, Your Honors. Victoria Brenner, B-R-E-N-N-E-R, on behalf of Beth Stillwell, the respondent in this matter. May it please the court. In preparing this argument for today, I couldn't help but notice that, you know, the court, having read all of the briefs and the file, can see that this case involves well-settled law. The appellant pled no facts that would warrant a reversal of any of the three rulings that he is challenging today. Basically, this is just another argument about the facts. The law is well settled.
Ms. Brenner, I'm actually kind of searching for the law that governs the first issue.
The first issue regarding the parenting time modification. So first of all,
And I'll just comment, I mean, your brief cites rely primarily on two non-precedential cases, and, you know, they're not binding on anyone, but in contrast, appellant relies on the case law, the statute, and the case law concerning restrictions on parenting time, and I think he argues this is a de facto restriction. So there's a body of case law there for us to look at.
Certainly, and this.
I feel like two different parties are pointing to different sources of law.
Certainly, and I would say the statute, Minnesota Statute 518-17, allows for the court to temporarily suspend parenting time without an evidentiary hearing, and that is what happened here. In this case...
Which provision is that?
Sorry.
I mean, that sounds like it'd be right on point. If you have it, and if you don't have it, then you may proceed.
Thanks, Your Honor. And I might pick it up later in my site. Right. So, in this case, the court appointed a special master pursuant to Rule 53.03, and the special master was enabled to change parenting time and also to implement any supervision if she thought that was necessary for either parent. Importantly, in this case, the physical custody label was reserved. It was specifically reserved. There was no physical custody label, and Mr. Stillwell makes a great deal about that his custody was changed with this restriction on his parenting time. The most important aspect of this is the restriction is temporary. And Mr. Lichen, Ruby v. Vanett, and Click v. Click, Mr. Stillwell was afforded an opportunity to be with his child, H.J.S., again, if he complied with the special master's rules. If he did the therapies and he followed other orders that were in the are in the children's best interests.
So I looked at Ruby, one of the non-precedential opinions you cited, and I see there that the court relied upon a different statute within Chapter 518, 518.131 sub 2A, which says no temporary order shall deny parenting time to a parent unless the court finds that the parenting time is likely to cause physical or emotional harm to the child.
And correct.
In that case, the Court of Appeals concluded that the district court had made an implicit finding that satisfied that criteria. Is there anything in the special master's orders in this case that either expressly or impliedly satisfied that statute?
Certainly, Your Honor. And again, you know, importantly, and I apologize, I did miscite the statute. That is the statute that I was looking for.
That's the one you were referring to?
Yeah,
yes,
thank
yeah.
you.
So it's not point 17, but point
131.
Correct, 131, yeah.
Right. And that is, so again, there in that statute, it is not required that an evidentiary hearing suss out the endangerment before, you know, a final determination. And in this case, the special master made very specific report to the court in her 21st order, and then also in her 17th order, all the way through, that there were allegations of that Mr. Stillwell had committed child sex abuse against the eldest of the children, and that he was interfering with the child protection and the criminal investigation by trying to intercept the younger child at the bus stop. So the special master was very concerned about these children being squeezed and about their safety with their father.
Am I correct that there was no finding either in the family court and certainly not the criminal court, which dismissed those allegations, that abuse actually occurred?
That's correct, Your Honor. So here again, you know, the special master was in a position on the front row, you know, under the hood of the car, as it were, to investigate what is going on in this family, talk with therapists, talk with investigators. There was also a guardian ad litem appointed, and the, you know, both of them did thorough reviews in speaking with all of the various therapists and teachers and parties in this case in determining and in trying to make sure that these children were safe. And certainly the guardian's reports point to the children's emotional safety and the eldest daughter's physical safety when in the care of Mr. Stillwell, their father. The emotional endangerment factor piece of this was very significant and very well investigated in coming to the determination that he needed to do the therapy modalities that were prescribed and work the programs to be able to spend time with his son. Did I satisfy the court's question?
Well, I was just asking whether a finding had ever occurred.
No finding that...
Either in the family court or the criminal court.
The criminal court action was dismissed, and the court has before it. The reason for the state dismissing the case was because the eldest child, the subject of the sex abuse claim, was in no condition to do a trial.
Well, whatever the rationale, there was no, I mean, there's the presumption
correct.
is innocent.
That is correct.
And so the basis, we don't know. I mean, we know what the prosecutor would say.
Absolutely.
As the basis, but as far as our proceedings are concerned.
In the family court file and the criminal case, there were no specific findings that that the abuse occurred. Correct.
So if the abuse is the primary basis for the concern, out of which grows, you know, physical and emotional concerns, address the assertion that this amounted, given the length of time, to a tantamount change in custody.
So Mr. Stillwell uses the term that this was a de facto change of custody. Right? And again, there was no physical custody label, but there is a change to his parenting time.
Well, I mean, we can call it no change in physical custody label, but if, in fact, it results in no physical custody at all, including parenting time, Why wouldn't we treat it as a de facto change in custody?
Because Mr. Stillwell was, it was temporary, and from the very beginning, the special master said this is temporary. Mr. Stillwell needs to do X, Y, Z before we can, you know, before we reevaluate if he is, if it is in the children's best interests, and that is the factor that, that is what the she needed to apply in determining his parenting time.
Why isn't that effectively a permanent or indefinite?
Because of
temporary?
Mr. Stillwell's actions. Because she gave him all of the tools and all and the roadmap to getting back to his parenting time. And he said, and part of it was, have supervised time, let's see how this goes. And he said, screw this. I'm not doing it.
Literally, and that literally, right?
Literally said,
not
screw
your words,
this.
But his, but
yes.
Yeah.
And the authority of the for the special master, though, to include that caveat, that condition on his parenting time is what?
Oh, she—that is conferred upon her in the special master appointment order to send parties to therapy, to tell them specifically what types of therapy to go to. She can send the children to therapy, and she did have a.
But the authority to condition parenting time is.
She did have that in her special master appointment order, yes.
I'd like to go back to that statute, .131, sub 2A, which was cited in Ruby. So if. If that applies, then does the statute and case law concerning restriction apply? I mean, I'm just wondering if maybe we look to this statute and only this statute, or do we do two different analyses in order to address the argument that's been made on appeal?
Again, I think looking at just this statute, it was a temporary restriction that was put in place. And it required no evidentiary hearing, and it gave Mr. Stillwell held all of the control to do the things that were recommended and ordered for him to do, and he didn't do them in time, including spending time with his child in a supervised setting.
Sounds like your position is that we should look to this statute, 131, only, and not consider the restriction.
Well, even statute. In the restriction statute, if it's a temporary restriction, it does not require an evidentiary hearing.
What's the authority for that?
The statute just says hearing. It doesn't say evidentiary hearing or trial. And again, if it's temporary, you know, the courts do this all the time. Ex parte motions are brought. Judges have the authority to, sight unseen, sign that ex parte, temporarily suspending parenting time. In this case, the difference is we had two people, well, initially the special master and then eventually the guardian ad litem, really getting in there and investigating this family's situation and coming out with recommendations saying, Dad's not ready yet.
Do the criminal court orders bear at all on our analysis?
Yes, actually, in fact, thank you, Your Honor. The whole background context to this is the criminal case. Mr. Stillwell brought... First of all, his parenting time was suspended, or it was prohibited from when the charges issued on June 29th of 2021. There was an investigation preliminary to that. So before that, he was prohibited from having parenting time with his adult child or older child, and then after the 29th, 2021 of June, he was prohibited from having contact with any children, including both children. Of his issue.
And how does that bear on our analysis, if at all?
So that goes more to, I would say, first of all, he didn't have a right to have parenting time, so add this confusion, well, not confusion, add this element to everyone's analysis, and should he be having time with any child? The criminal court prohibited it. That made it easier for the family court and the special master to say, okay, let's hit the pause button. Let's keep doing our investigations. Let's look at this closer. Let's keep people on their paces. Do your things. Do your therapy. Get better. And then we can reevaluate this. But instead, he kept stalling, and didn't do the things that were ordered.
I meant less as, not so much as a practical effect on our analysis, but legally. I mean, if the criminal court issues an order,
yes,
and that order is not subject to this review, how does that,
correct,
the fact of the criminal court's order being in place as to barring contact with the son and the daughter.
How does
that affect our analysis?
I believe that it definitely makes it easier for the court to uphold the lower court's decision because it was a factor at the time. He was prohibited. The special master was aware he was prohibited by the criminal court. And the district court was also aware of this until I think it was April 15th was when the criminal court judge, the new criminal court judge on the case, lifted the restriction as to the younger child and said, Dad can have the supervised parenting time with him or as tracks with the family court. And by that time, the family court wasn't allowing the contact with him. So these two are tracking each other not perfectly well, but they're certainly aware of each other. And my client didn't even know that restriction was lifted until June because she wasn't on the criminal court pleadings. No one in the family court, as far as I know, knew that his restriction as to the younger child was lifted. So it very much impacts the court analysis, the district court's analysis, and this court's analysis. And another important part about the criminal case, as to Mr. Stillwell's second request for a prima facie case of endangerment, he brought that prima facie case, or tried to make a prima facie case of endangerment as to mother, when he had a DANCO that prohibited him from having contact with any children, including the younger and the older child. He brought that case at that time, trying to get a change of custody while there was a DANCO in place. And to that point, yes.
The second one was which month and year? What time period?
I'm sorry, second.
Well, you said that his second motion. When was that? Was it the one in January?
I'm sorry, I'm talking about his second request for relief here. I apologize.
Okay. There was one motion to modify custody. A single motion to modify
custody.
Right. Okay.
He did bring six different motions that were heard on the October 3rd hearing date, which goes to the attorney's fees claim.
Yeah. I misunderstood. Thank you.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Can I have one question?
Certainly.
Even though we're at the expiration of Ms. Brenner's time, I'm just trying to get the chronology in mind. And in the district court's order, paragraph 7 talks about the guardian ad litem's report, the 30-page report, where the guardian ad litem is recommending sole custody to the mother, father having no contact, and parenting time being reserved pending resolution of the criminal matter. So as we've talked about, the criminal matter has been resolved. And does our record reflect, I don't see any other mention of the guardian ad litem. Perhaps I've overlooked it. I'm just wondering if the record reflects any additional work by the guardian ad litem following resolution of the criminal matter.
The guardian, issued her initial report on September 24th of 2022, and then she issued a subsequent report. Let's see, it's a shorter one. That was on March 30th of 2023.
And did that follow the resolution of the criminal?
It did.
And does the district court take that report into its consideration in its order?
No, it did not. Wait, hold on. No, it did not, because this is after the January 1, 2023 ruling that is being challenged today.
Thank you.
Yes, and I am out of time, and I didn't get to everything, but my pleadings are adequate.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Counsel for appellant, any rebuttal?
Thank you. I want to make clear.
And I'll just remind you to restate your name.
Oh, absolutely. I'm sorry. Matthew Gilbert, G-I-L-B-E-R-T, representing the appellant, Harry Stillwell. I want to make clear 518.131, that statute is only relevant to temporary orders during the pendency of a proceeding. Pending until the final disposition. In family law, the final disposition is when the judgment and decree is entered. So that statute is totally inapplicable to this matter. What is relevant is 518.18, which is modification of custody, as well as 518.175. Because again, there's a final decree that was entered back in 2019, and in order to modify the decree or change custody or parenting time, these are the applicable statutes that need to be followed. And again, if there's a restriction, which there is here, Mr. Stillwell went from zero parenting time or 50-50, 50% of the time to zero, or if there's a de facto award of custody to one parent, which has also happened here, then an evidentiary hearing is required under the Nice-Peterson standard, as well as cited in the other cases that we've provided. I mean, that's just...
Okay, I appreciate that. Are you saying then that point 131 applies only before a decree, but if there is a decree and we're in modification proceedings, then it does not apply?
That's correct, Your Honor. That's absolutely correct.
In the Ruby case, were the facts different, the procedural posture different from this case? Was that a case, was that a pre-decree
case? I believe so. The language of the statute's clear because it's limited to pending the disposition, the final disposition of the case, which again is when the judgment and decree is entered.
Thank you.
With that, I want to make clear that Child Protection found no basis for maltreatment of AJS. The criminal charges were dismissed against Mr. Stillwell. The DANCO has been violated. There's been no allegation whatsoever that Mr. Stillwell has in any way endangered HJS. Mr. Stillwell has complied with the special master's orders, including completing DBT programming. And one of the issues in terms of why this temporary, well, it's called temporary schedule, has gone on for continuing is he completes all these tasks that the special master has assigned him. He completes the DBT programming, and suddenly the goalposts have changed. And there's different programming he needs to do. There's a psychological evaluation the special master wants him to do. Again, this has gone on for over 3 years. Case law is clear that he's at minimum entitled to an evidentiary hearing on these issues. This is no longer temporary. This is a permanent order. And with that, again, the special master has no authority to modify custody, which the special master has effectively done here. And it's clear that this is a miscarriage of justice, frankly, and this is the denial of Mr. Stillwell having a relationship with his son. With that said, I have nothing further unless Your Honors have questions.
Doesn't appear to be any further questions from the bench. Thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you to both counsel for your briefing in this matter. The matter is submitted and under advisement. I'll just say this, by way of perhaps just editorial reference, you can take it or leave it. We're going to decide the questions that are presented to us, the legal questions. That's all we can do. I will just say that the district court record seems to be pretty clear that Tinsa suggests that the mutual pretty deep acrimony between the parties is contributing both to the litigation and to the children and their emotional well-being. Lawyers are in a unique position sometimes to provide their clients with guidance beyond the law, perhaps directing them away from the emotional tension that goes into these things. It seems to me this is a case that would where the children would be best served if the parties are able to separate their acrimony from with each other from issues of the relationship with their children. And that's, you can take that or leave it, but this is a troubling case beyond the legal questions. But we're going to decide the legal questions based upon the issues that are presented to us and the law that controls. So thank you both.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Have a good afternoon.